Welcome, and thank you for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program features Lawrence Lessig, who joins Bob Chesney to talk about institutional corruption. Lawrence Lessig is a professor of law at Harvard Law School. His current work concerns institutional corruption and the economy of influence that weakens the effectiveness of an institution or weakens the public trust in it.
Okie dokie, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today in WILL AM 580. We have as our guest someone who I've been looking forward to having back for quite some time, author of a brand new book, Republic Lost, How Money Corrupts Congress and the Plan to Stop It. Lawrence Lessig, our guest, author of this book. Larry, welcome back to Media Matters.
Great to be back, Bob.
As always, I devoured your book upon getting it, learned a lot. I'm going to be stealing from it liberally in the future, the highest praise I can give a fellow scholar. And just wanted to, for listeners maybe not familiar with your career trajectory, Larry, if you could start by talking about your work, and we've had you on in the past, has dealt with copyright, with internet policy, has dealt with intellectual property issues. You argued the Eldred case before the U.S. Supreme Court 6 years ago. How did you end up on corruption in Congress? What led you to that path, and what's the point of this research?
Well, after more than a decade working on these copyright and internet policy-related issues, and seeing lots of progress in the public around these issues, parents and teachers and businesses and institutions recognizing the need for an update of our copyright system and the need to protect things like internet neutrality. But recognizing there was no progress in the context of policymakers, an obvious point hit me, that we weren't going to make progress in the policy field until we dealt with a more fundamental underlying corruption that makes progress in policy impossible for a wide range of important issues, not just esoteric issues like copyright, not just infrastructure issues like the internet, but fundamental issues like global warming or healthcare or the complexity of our tax system. These were all areas where we were never going to make progress. This Congress has basically become stalemated around a wide range of these issues because of this underlying corruption. So I figured, I'd done a lot of work in this field. I had tenure. I adopted a rule that said every 10 years you should throw away all of your intellectual capital and start again. So that's basically what I did. And this is the first book that I've done out of that work.
How many more years till you have to throw this overboard?
It's about 7 right now. So, we don't have much time to fix this.
Yeah, we better hurry at the show. We want to get it in by the deadline. Well, Larry, in the book, you make a important point, and I think a lot of people, you don't oftentimes think of this, but when we think of corruption, of politicians or anything, your impression is of some wealthy person or some private interest, maybe collecting money, going in and paying off a politician or a regulator, giving them some sort of compensation in return, they get something, and that it's a pretty much a blatant violation of law and certainly ethics. And you argue that that's really not the best way to understand corruption, right?
That's right, or at least it's not the best way to understand the corruption that's really destroying our republic. Our Congress is not filled with 535 Rob Blagojeviches or Randy Duke Cunninghams or William Jeffersons, people who have explicitly violated criminal laws by exchanging government favors for private benefit. Our Congress is filled with an extraordinary number of decent, honest, hardworking people committed to what they believe in, whether you believe in what they believe in or not. But they find themselves in a system where they have to spend 30 to 70% of their time raising money to get back to Congress or to get their party back in power. And the point that I try to make is that that activity, which obviously leads them, as it would lead any of us, to develop an extraordinary sensitivity to the funders, is a corruption of the type of dependency which our framers intended Congress to have, which was a dependency, as Federalist 52 puts it, on the people alone. So if you are dependent upon the funders, you're not dependent upon the people alone, because the funders in our system of funding Congress are not the people. And so that corruption is the corruption, I think, that makes it so Congress can't begin to address a wide range of issues that it needs to address. And that's the corruption we need to worry about, not, people like Rob Blagojevich trying to sell Senate seats.
Let's go into that and talk about that in a little more detail now, Larry Lessig. And I think that one of the, even before we go into specific case studies and examples of how this plays out on crucial policies, I think one of the striking things of your book, Republic Lost, Larry, was that you go into how the way Congress works has really changed radically in the last three decades from what, you know, we're taught in civics books and what I think I grew up thinking was how it worked. And it's almost an entirely different institution today than it was, say, in 1980.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, today I just had a piece in CNN, on the CNN blog, you know, responding to Newt Gingrich's claim, you know, when he was being asked about whether, you know, his being able to trade his influence for about $1.8 million in fees from Freddie Mac demonstrated he was just an insider. You know, AP asked him this question, and he said, what it demonstrates is that I have experience in Washington, and if you want to change Washington, I'm the guy who can do it. And what my piece tries to demonstrate is, yeah, in fact, that's true. Newt Gingrich is the only candidate who's actually succeeded in changing Washington. He's probably more responsible for the current architecture of Congress than anybody since Madison, because he launched a project in the early 1990s which had the effect of radically changing the way in which our Congress functions by focusing the effort of members on the job of winning control and keeping control of Congress by forcing them into a pattern of behavior of raising money both at home and on the road, and giving them the opportunity to do that by cutting the work week of Congress back to basically 3 days in those weeks in which it works, multiplying the number of committees so there are many more people that you can call up who need you to like them, so therefore you're willing to give them money. Just changing the institution is this extremely polarized institution devoted to the single task of maintaining control of one party. And that is new. It is really from the Gingrich Revolution on that we see this transformation. And that's kind of hopeful because you can imagine, you know, it's within our lifetime, we can imagine getting back to something a little bit more healthy, a little bit more balanced, if only we could identify the core problem here and fix it.
One of the striking features of your book, Larry Lessig, that certainly got my attention, and I was somewhat aware of this, in fact, I was well aware of it, but not the extent of it, is the term you use in there is how Congress has become a farm club for K Street. And K Street, for listeners who might not be familiar with it, is the street that's associated with the lobbying industry, much like Madison Avenue is with advertising in New York. And the number, how really people leave Congress, and a very high percentage of current members of Congress or recent members of Congress will go on to earn spectacular incomes working as lobbyists. That seems to be, that's really the final achievement of a career now.
Yeah, and it makes it clear why it's going to be extremely hard to change the system, because the quote, Farm League from K Street, I actually got from Jim Cooper, who's a Democrat from Tennessee, been in Congress for as long as all of about 20 other members of Congress. And he, you know, is devastated by the change in the character of the institution. And the change really is the rise in the number of people on Capitol Hill, both congressmen and staffers and bureaucrats, whose business model is a business model focused on their life as lobbyists. You know, so I teach it at a great American law school. Our graduates, some of them go to work on Wall Street. Their very first year working on Wall Street, they get paid as much as a member of Congress does. And like a member of Congress, at least one of these Farm League members of Congress, they expect to spend about 6 or 8 years making that amount of money, and then they hope to become partners. But my students want to become partners in a law firm and make $500,000 or $1 million a year. Members of Congress want to become partners on K Street and make $500,000 or $1 million a year. Now, as you can imagine, associates in a law firm are not actually very strong-willed souls to stand up to the partners in the law firm because they depend upon them and they want their futures, and their futures only come if their partners like them. That's the problem in Washington. Members of Congress are dependent upon these lobbyist firms who will hire them, and so they're eager to make friends, not to make enemies. And if you're making friends with the people who have all the money in the world in Washington, you're not making friends with Americans, because Americans aren't represented in that mix.
You know, Larry Lessig, I'm reminded of a comment that Michael Pollan, the chair of the Federal Communications Commission under President George W. Bush's first term, and he said quite candidly, when he's talking to a corporate representative in his office in his capacity as chair of the Federal Communications Commission, you know, he knows in some ways he's always interviewing for his job once he leaves the FCC.
And, of course, he got an extremely lucrative job as a lobbyist after leaving the FCC.
And from precisely one of those people he spoke to.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Our guest is Larry Lessig from Harvard Law School, the author of the brand new book, Republic Lost, How Money Corrupts and a Plan to Stop It, just published by 12 Books. It's out now. You can call into Media Matters if you have a question or comment for Larry Lessig. The number here is 217-333-9455 and our toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. Now, Larry, it's been a little bit abstract so far. We've talked about the contours of the problem. Let's talk. Give a couple of case studies. So, like you said, so you can really see where the rubber hits the road and what the political, social, human impact is of a system where money comes to dominate Congress and pretty much drown out, I would say, pretty much all other voices on issue after issue. And yeah, I think the place to start might be with the news report we had on Media Minutes right before going on air about the Stop Online Piracy Act, which is the latest venture by the intellectual property copyright owning lobby in Washington, and the most dramatic effort yet to advance their interests. And maybe, I mean, if you give a little background on this, you know, what this lobby is, what their goal is, and sort of what their arsenal is compared to the librarians and educators and rock and roll musicians who are battling them.
Yeah, so this is the latest in really about a 15-year war where the copyright industries, who are enormously well-represented in Washington, have used their power to get Congress to pass ever more restrictive and punitive measures to punish what they call, quote, piracy. And I think that, you know, Zoe Lofgren, who's a congresswoman from California, and been quite an important leader in pushing back against this craziness. So Lofgren put it well in the introduction in the Media Minutes segment when she was talking about the fact that here we're going to have a hearing on this crazy bill, and of the six people testifying, five of them are in favor of the bill, and one is opposed to it. And there's no technical person who is able to explain exactly why the kind of changes that SOPA would enforce would weaken the infrastructure capacity of the Internet. Now, you know, you say, well, maybe 5-1 represents is appropriate because if you think in the world of people who know something about this issue, maybe five times the people who know something about this issue exist versus the one that opposed it. But actually, people who know anything about this issue outside of the narrow special interests of the copyright industry are wildly opposed to continuing this self-defeating war against our kids, as opposed to thinking about other strategies for addressing the problem of copyright in the digital age. Yet Congress cannot begin to think about any of these other strategies because both parties are so fearful of making Hollywood their enemy. And so we continue to have the kind of crazy policies that we have that don't achieve anything other than rendering a generation of our kids criminal. And my view is that there's not many things that would justify rendering a whole generation criminal, and certainly not this hopeless war that they're waging against, quote, piracy.
And Larry, to follow up on that, in the book you gave a figure which I think is astonishing, which is since 1998, the copyright industries have spent $1.3 billion lobbying Congress for a proper legislation, and those who look for copyright reform, just trying to limit it and represent sort of fair use in the public domain and schools and libraries and businesses that want to get into businesses that involve copyright, they've spent a grand total of $1 million.
Yeah, now, as I say in the book, it's hard to really get fair, accurate numbers there. So I put those numbers out there as a first cut, and I say, you know, even if they're off by a factor of 10, still you've got many times the amount of money on one side of this battle as opposed to the other side of this battle. And is it any wonder then that you have policy that looks so skewed and crazy? And I think, you know, that's just another example of how the system works across the range of important issues, not just in an area like copyright.
Yeah, and I want to get to some of those issues after we get to our next caller, but I just want to add one point for listeners who might not follow this issue closely. Oftentimes what we're talking about with extending copyright and making its protection more onerous, it has nothing to do with actually promoting culture. It's really about protecting existing copyrights for material that was done years ago and just keeping a monopoly franchise on it that much longer. It's just it purely represents the interests of those who own the copyright and have the lobby, no one else in the world.
Absolutely.
Let's go to our phone lines now. Our guest, of course, is Larry Lessig, author of Republic Lost. I'm Bob McChesney. This is Media Matters. Line 1, Champagne, you're on the air.
Hi, I'd like the guest to address the problem of campaign financing as well. I think that's all wrapped up in this. I think it's all tied together. It's all about money talking instead of voters and ideas talking. One idea I have, what would happen if I ran for office against Bob McChesney? And Bob and I agreed to a rule. If Bob raises $50, he gives me $25. If I raise $500, I give him $250. Is that legal? Could we agree for that to be legal? And wouldn't it take a lot of the hocus pocus out of what goes on in election campaigns today?
Thank you, caller.
Let me start with the general point and then the specific question. Absolutely. You know, my sacred text in my book is Henry David Thoreau's passage from On Walden, where he says, "For every 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil, there's one striking at the root." And I call that person a root striker. And the whole objective of the book is to try to recruit more root strikers. You know, we all have our issues. My issue used to be copyright. Yours might be global warming, whatever. But we need to recognize how all of these issues have a common root, and the common root is, I think, campaign finance. Now, campaign finance is a problem not because there's money in politics. You know, we need money in politics. The problem is the money comes from a tiny slice of America. 0.26% of Americans give more than $200 in any congressional campaign. 0.05% of Americans max out in any congressional campaign. You know, so the Occupy Wall Street people are so proud of we're the 99%. They should say we're the 99.95% who don't get access in the way that the 0.05% does, because the 0.05% is giving to campaigns in a way that gets the attention of members and candidates for Congress. So I think this is the problem, and I think we have to address that problem by finding a way to fund campaigns so that the people are the funders, and when Congress is responsible to the funders, it's responsible to the people. Now, with respect to the particular idea, I like the architecture of the idea. At least it would be better than what we've got now. Not as good, I think, as the kind of public funding proposals that I describe in the book. But in fact, right now, it wouldn't be possible for members to agree to that, at least in the sense of I got my $500 and then I turned over $250 to you, because I, as a candidate, would be limited in the amount of money I can contribute to you as my opponent, $5,000 in a primary and in a general election cycle. You could do it by, if you had a very elaborate device, to say that when the $500 came in, you rebated it and you said to the person, okay, please send $250 to my opponent. The person might not be eager to do that if the person doesn't like your opponent much. So it could maybe in a cumbersome way be done. But I think that, you know, we just need to bite the bullet and face the fact that we got to get people to understand the critical need for public funding of public campaigns if we're ever going to address a wide range of public policy issues that we all care about. And by we all, I literally mean we all. My strongest effort in the book was to demonstrate why this is an issue that both people on the right and people on the left need to worry about, not just people on the left. And I think we just need to take on the campaign of trying to convince the world of this necessity.
Larry Lessig, in the book, you also have a very illuminating discussion of the Citizens United case. And I think a lot of our listeners have heard the name. It's sort of become a catchphrase for letting corporate money be unaccountable and come in and dominate our politics. Could you explain the significance of the case and what it means for the argument you're making in the book, and how we have to deal with that?
Yeah. So the simple result of Citizens United is that corporations, like individuals, have a constitutional right to spend an unlimited amount of money promoting or opposing any political candidate, so long as they don't coordinate that spending with the candidate. So independent expenditures, meaning uncoordinated expenditures, are unlimited using both corporate funds and in Buckley versus Vallejo from 1976, the court said individual funds. Now, this is a critical complication to the project of reforming the corrupting influence of money in politics, because before this decision, I think all that we needed to do was to achieve some version of public funding of elections. And we could have done that consistent with the Constitution just by passing a statute. But now I fear that even if we get public funding of elections, even if we get the ideal version of public funding of elections, there will still be an opportunity to exploit this independent expenditure liberty so that candidates may no longer be shape-shifting their views and attitudes to raise money, but they will become shape-shifting their views and attitudes in order to encourage the right kind of independent expenditures from extremely powerful interests that right now are demonstrating their willingness to spend unlimited amounts of money to direct the results in elections. So I think that that brings us back to, you know, a very difficult recognition that ultimately we will have to get constitutional change if we in fact are ever going to achieve the kind of responsive, uncorrupted political process that I think all of us think we need.
Our guest today, Lawrence Lessig. I'm Bob McChesney. This is Media Matters. Lawrence Lessig is a professor of law at Harvard Law School, author of the brand new book, Republic Lost, How Money Corrupts Congress, and a Plan to Stop It. We've got another half hour to talk with Professor Lessig. The number here at WILLAM 580 is 217-333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines. We have a couple of callers who have been waiting patiently. Let's start line two, Champagne. You're on the air with Larry Lessig.
Yeah, just two issues. I mean, and your comment. You're talking about K Street, the influence, but what about the influence of Glover Norquist, in the Republican Party? And the other issue is that I didn't realize until recently that Congress doesn't have to pay by the rules in terms of insider trading. Congress is legal for them to do that. So there's two issues, and thank you.
Thank you very much, caller. Larry Lessig?
You can hear great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer. Signs. Don't punish me, sister, with brutality. Sister, talk to me, sister, so you can see. Judge us simply 'cause our hair is long. Can't see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. Ooh.
Right, right on. Right on.
Right.
And now for something completely different.